Mamdani, right? Zohran Mamdani, the mayor-elect of New York City, and Bernie Sanders were both there. The significance of 26 years ago and today as we end this conversation.
These issues haven't gone away. I think what's been fascinating for us as we made the film, we could see so many of the issues that are galvanizing the youth movements and other movements that are trying to reform or change the direction of the Democratic Party. They were there and filling the streets 26 years ago. And the power structure at the time didn't listen to the people then. I hope that they begin to listen to them now.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Ian Bell, director of the new documentary WTO 99, and longtime corporate critic Ralph Nader. WTO 99 starts screening Friday at DCTV's Firehouse Cinema here in New York. I'll be hosting a Q&A with Ian after the 7:30 screening. Also, tomorrow, December 4th, Thursday, I'll be doing the Q&A after the 7:30 screening of Steal the Story, Please, about Democracy Now!'s 30 years. At the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor at the Hamptons Doc Fest there. Happy birthday to Emily Goslin. Again, I'll be in Sag Harbor Thursday night. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, going on now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by gifting your loved one a KBOO membership this season?
For the flag still unfurled, he said, freedom isn't easy. It's a promise, not a crown. It's the courage to stand up when others bow down. Call me Antifa if it means I fight for love, for every race and color under heaven's light above. If liberty's my language, justice is my plea, then call me Antifa, that's alright with me. I don't raise fists for hatred, I don't march for war, I walk beside my neighbor, that's what my heart is for. I see the flags of fear go waving in the streets, but peace is not surrender. It's where the brave hearts meet. Call me Antifa if I stand against the chains, if I won't let the bullies write their lies into our names, if I still believe in truth and the right to discern.
right. Pro workers, thinkers, builders too. Pro the promise, red, white, and blue. To blame. We're one fragile family under many names. I'll sing for the broken, I'll kneel for the lost. Peace isn't weakness, it's love at all costs. Call me Antifa. If it means I stand with you.
Good morning, Portland and beyond. You're listening to Portland's only PDX Progressive Talk Radio on 90.7 FM KBOO in Portland. I'm Sherry. And we've got a lot to cover today. A $373 million budget shortfall that resulted in new taxes, and a $10 million effort to have AI regulated at the federal level. But first, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, or rather, the MediaZilla in the room. You know that we've been talking about the twin squeeze facing families in Oregon. Well, KBOO is facing one too. Congress voted to rescind federal grants for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and the CPB is shutting down. And we know who to land responsibility on that. But this means that KBOO is losing about $110,000 in funding starting in 2026. The funny thing is, from the administration, they seem to think that cutting the money cuts our signal. And they're wrong. This is the KBOO Fights Back campaign. We have a goal of raising $75,000 by December 31st to keep this mic on and these transmitters hot. If you value independent media that calls out poorly managed capitalism and stands up for the community, we need you. Here's how you can help us fight back. You can go to kboo.fm/give, and there's a donate button there. You can tell it how much you want to give. You can even leave us a message. It's a great place to see who else is giving and things like this. So go to kboo.fm/give. You can text KBOO to 44321, or you can go to the KBOO app. We have an app. It's really cool. I've been using it a lot. There's a little donate button up on the right-hand side. Click on that, and it'll take you to the give page. Or if all that's just enough, you've had it, you want to mail us a check, well, we take paper. We take paper at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and our zip code is 97214. So there are plenty of ways you can help us fight back outside of listening and keeping up with the community. And, you know, we always take volunteers, so you can always volunteer. Thank you for everything that you've helped us do in 2025. We could not operate or be here without you. So thank you for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Thank you for listening to KBOO. And please help us raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you've been following the news from Salem, you know the drama. The Biden administration had previously granted Oregon a massive influx in federal dollars for infrastructure. It was a done deal. The check was in the mail. And then came the election. Then came the new administration. And in what I'm calling the Mar-a-Lago maneuver, the Trump administration clawed back hundreds of thousands of dollars. Poof, be gone, it's gone. That left the Oregon State Legislature staring at an astounding $373 million budget gap. A gap that was supposed to fix bridges, pave roads, and keep our public transit system from imploding. So what did Salem do? Well, they panicked. They went into special session, the priciest one in a decade, by the way, and passed a massive transportation package to fill the hole. And recently, Governor Kotek signed it. I guess she signed it in September. Now, let's get real for a second. I'm a progressive. I like roads and I like bridges that don't collapse. I love public transit, but the way this went down, it kind of smells like wet wool. It's icky. The package dubbed Trip 2025 by the wonks in Salem, it's heavy. We're talking about a gas tax increase of 6 cents immediately with more to come. We're talking about a jump in vehicle registration fees, and I'll get to that in a second. And we're talking about a payroll tax increase for transit, which will hurt small business owners. Any business with a population of employees under 500 is considered a small business. And I know what you're screaming at your radio right now. It's like, why are they nickel and diming us? Dude, this is bigger than nickel and diming. This is some crazy talk. The breakdown of the taxation that we are going to face here at the end of December are an increase of 6 cents per gallon on our gas. Right now it's 40, so that would be 46 cents. The registration fees for your car are ridiculous. So for a passenger vehicle, and these are the ones without the fancy license plates, the personalized ones like I got, passenger vehicle registration is going from $43, which I pay like $90 now because of my little personalized license plate, from $43 to $85. That is going to exponentially increase all of our licensing registration for everybody. It's insane. The light trailers and your electric vehicles are going to face registration fees that are now $63. They'll be $105 to register your light trailer or your low speed EV. There are high-speed EVs, but they're not mentioned. Your mopeds and your motorcycles are going from $44 to $86 for registration fees. Now, granted, we pay these in Washington. You have to do it every year. Down here, you do it every 2 years. So, I mean, yeah, it's 2 years, but that's ridiculous. Title fees are going from $77 to $216. That's insane. This is why we're having this conversation. The payroll tax increase. So right now, your for transit is 0.1% of your paycheck. It's going up 100% to 0.2% of your paycheck. And then Oregonians who make $68,000 and above are going to pay an extra $11.20 per check. It's per month. So you break that down. You can have it for the month. That's an extra $136 a year, which is excessive considering the other things. So here's the hard truth, Oregon. We're suffering from the Oregon paradox, and I have been saying this. I'm in a lot of chats and on social media and stuff, and I have been saying this for months. You're going to hear my opinion on this because it's the only thing that makes sense. We hate sales tax. In Oregon, I've lived here on and off since fourth grade. That's way too many years. We have always fought a sales tax. Always. We treat it like it's radioactive. We also hate or are misinformed on the corporate tax. Remember Measure 97 a few years back? We voted it down because Amazon told us to. So if we won't tax sales and we won't enforce fair taxation on massive corporations extracting wealth from our state, where does the money come from? Well, I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from you and me and every other. It comes from car registrations. It comes from your gas pump. It comes from your paycheck. We're like a cheap date who orders lobster and then complains when the bill comes, right? We have to pay for infrastructure we use. But because we refuse to tax the wealthy or tourists via sales tax, the burden falls on us, the working class. However, and this is a big however, just because the tax structure is broken doesn't mean the process should be. There's a signature gathering effort happening right now. It's largely led by Republicans. Yes, it's the No Tax Oregon folks. And usually I'm on the other side of the fence from them, but on this, I look at those clipboards and I'm nodding. Yes, we have to say something. They're trying to get a veto referendum on the ballot. In Oregon, if you get enough signatures, you can pause a law passed by the legislature and put it to a vote of the people. The magic number for this number of signatures, 78,116. That's 4% of the votes cast for the governor in the last election. Reports are coming in that they already have 150,000 unverified signatures. That is double what they need. And it shows people are angry about this. And frankly, they should be. Not because we don't need to fund roads, we do. But because this was a $373 million patch job forced on us because of federal clawbacks and state panic, without a single voter having a say. So, here's my hot take on this lovely Portland Wednesday. I want you to consider signing the petition. I know, PDX Progressive is suggesting we sign a Republican petition. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. But listen, if this legislation is good, if filling a $373 million budget gap is truly the only way to save our roads, then the state should be able to sell it to us. They should be able to stand on a debate stage and explain why the gas tax is better than a corporate tax. If we don't sign this, the taxes start, the fees go up, and we never get to have that conversation. If we do sign it, it goes on the ballot in November 2026. We pause the tax. We force a conversation. We force our leaders to respect the fact that we are the ones writing the checks. Granted, they do as well. So if you could keep an eye out for those clipboards, they're out there. I saw folks gathering signatures at a grocery store in Malala. I know they're in Gresham and in Beaverton. Read the text. Make sure it's the transportation referral, and please consider signing it. Let's remind Salem that even with a supermajority, they still work for us. And let's remind the folks in D.C. that when you claw back money, Oregonians don't just roll over. We get organized. Today, I saw an article in The Hill titled AI Advocacy Group Launches $10 Million Campaign Pushing for Federal AI Framework. And what they're advocating for in this article is literally federal legislation that manages AI's regulatory policy over state policy. So whatever the states have in place regarding the use of AI, ethical, legal, and ramifications, the federal government's legislation, if passed, when they come up with something, would override any state, kind of like our Schedule I drugs do. And there's a statement in this article, and the article is in The Hill on their website, dated 11/25/25, and Julia Shapiro is the reporter, journalist. There's a quote in here from the Super PAC. Where'd it go? Super PAC Leading the Future is announcing an omni-channel advertising effort across digital, social, and television platforms, arguing that a federal framework is necessary to maintain U.S. leadership on the technology. And that is a quote from the article. They are under the impression that if we want America to win on innovation, creating jobs for American workers, and protecting our families, communities, and values, Congress must pass federal AI legislation now so America can win, is part of a statement that they made regarding this campaign. So I was curious about that, and I had heard about this in other on other channels. So NBC and ABC had a quick byline on it. And I wondered at the time, well, isn't that against what the tech bros wanted out of any kind of agreement for supporting the Trump campaign? And what this statement translates into, so if Congress doesn't pass nationwide laws, the U.S. is going to fall behind, lose jobs, and become unsafe, is a quote from the Super PAC Leading the Future in their bid for congressional legislation around AI. And they're using words like innovation, American jobs, protecting families, communities, and values, because these are go words for Congress. They're action words in Washington, D.C. However, underneath that call and that rally to get people excited are some other things that you might want to consider regarding the tech bro group, right? And this is interesting. So they're warning that without AI rules, we would have economic disruption, job loss, security threats, misinformation, and harm to families and communities. And so in mobilizing these people, they're organizing a massive phone into congressional offices. They expect to have more than 10,000 calls in a day. And that's not normal grassroots. I mean, we can get people to call Congress, but no way are they going to get 10,000 calls in a day. And there's a quote that is known to go around that if your voicemail inbox is overflowing by noon, you're going to pay attention. And that is the belief system behind this level of urgency coming from the super PAC. So they claim that there's broad public support for Congress to act in regulatory form on AI technologies and how it's used in distribution. And is there? I do know that in certain, just from the communities I interact with, in certain communities, yes. I mean, there is a large population that wants some regulatory laws around copyright infringement, around intellectual property, around the fact that without permission, OpenAI and Perplexity and Google have gone and trained, and those aren't the only ones. There's tons of AI companies who are leveraging large language model technology to get information on buyers, on people who want to run for office, on all sorts of different things, authors and artists, and somebody who is, full disclosure, a daily user of AI and not just one tool. I use a collection of AI tools for graphics, for writing scripts, for doing speeches, for research, for creating content, for audience segmentation. I take a business and what they do to serve their community, and I organize what kind of people they need to go after and how, and where their best bang for their buck is going to be and what channel should they be on. I use AI to do a lot of this. And I tell you, before, in, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it would take me 3 weeks to do what I can do today in an hour. So it's not going away anytime soon. Because many small businesses like mine, and this is serious, this, what they're trying to do is going to impact us. It's going to impact influencers, content creators, small businesses, artists, authors, journalists. It's going to impact many people across many different industries across this nation. And many of us depend on these tools so we can serve more clients more effectively, more authentically. So I've asked people their feelings on AI and what the issues are, and there's a litany of them. And one of the most prevalent issues is coming up, and it's happening now, and it's going to be pervasive in all of our lives. And that's dealing with the data centers that are being built all over the country. Corporations are exponentially using up resources, expediently using up resources way more than what they were designed to accommodate. And that is significantly increasing the common consumer's rate for service, for utilities and electricity in their house. And that's wrong, because the corporations, not only are they exponentially impacting our economy, our environment, and the way we live, work, and play every day, but they aren't paying for any of it. They get so many tax breaks, especially under this administration. They aren't paying for any of what they're using and taking from us. They are using our resources, our streets, our schools, our infrastructure, our trains, our environment, our air, our everything, our water. For goodness sake, they're using tons of the water. And then they don't want to compensate us for what we're paying for them, right? So there is a study out recently that says you pay $35 a year for someone experiencing hard times and being on SNAP, or even those who are in generational poverty living off of SNAP. You're paying $35. We are paying $35 a year to support that community and those populations, and $700 a year for corporate kickbacks, corporate tax deferments, corporate handouts, right? That they are the welfare queen of Reagan's speeches, not the single mom who is just trying to feed her kid and get on with their lives and get themselves into a better situation. It is not the immigrant who is not eligible to receive those benefits, or the ones who are here as refugees and need help getting settled. It's not their fault that your energy rates are going up. It's these corporations who are exploiting our resources and not giving anything to support the communities that elevated them to get there. And that was the whole idea with Blackout, but that's another segment. Right now we're talking about national legislation on the use, distribution, and purposes of AI and what we can do with it. Now, my question was, because if you remember during the inauguration, was it the inauguration? I believe it was. So all the tech bros sitting behind Trump, right? In front of his campaign, right? So it was Trump, the tech bros, and then his campaign and the people who have been, and senators and stuff who should have had those seats, but they didn't because they didn't buy him. The tech bros did. So there's this super PAC leading the future is trying to say that people want this legislation. They're amplifying their voices as lobbyists, and the Congress would essentially be ignoring. They use, you know, I use this line. We would all be silenced if the unions got their way on campaign finance reform. Little did I know we bypassed the legislature and got stuck in the cabinet, as you might say. Anyway, that's another segment. The unspoken layer comes in that groups like these represent the big players. So here's where the segue into how the tech pros would be impacted by this legislation. So they want regulation. These tech bros want regulation, but the kind of regulation that benefits their vision, just like normal Republicans, the kind of benefits their vision, not necessarily what's best for small creators, gig workers, or vulnerable communities. They're pushing Congress to move, but may also be pushing for standards that favor large companies, for rules that lock in their market advantage, and for regulations that give them stability and predictability. It's not evil, it's politics. But it's also important to understand why the urgency, right? They're launching a high-pressure national campaign to force Congress to pass AI laws immediately, claiming it's necessary for America's safety, jobs, and competitiveness, while also reshaping the regulatory framework in a way that benefits the big players. We might talk about how it conflicts with Trump's earlier statements to the tech bro community. So on the surface, it might appear that there's a conflict with the informal understanding Trump made with tech companies. But if we look closer, the truth is significantly more complicated. Trump's earlier stance with the big tech companies leaned on anti-regulation. So during his most recent outreach with Silicon Valley leaders like Meta and Google and Oracle, they wanted fewer regulations, more innovation, innovative freedom, and less federal oversight, along with faster development cycles in their ability to get more money. This aligns with how tech giants typically prefer to operate. They move fast, they avoid restrictions, and they keep government out of the way. So at the first glance, a super PAC urging Congress to pass federal AI regulations looks like a sharp turn. I mean, that's what I first thought, is like, what I can just imagine what the tech bros are thinking. So the groups shouting pass AI regulation now, like Leading Future or Build American AI, aren't the same organizations as Amazon, Meta, Google, or OpenAI. Their donors may include tech-aligned individuals, but their goals aren't identical to the major tech corporations' desires. These groups often represent defense sector interests, national security hawks, pro-innovation industrial policy advocates, groups concerned about China's AI advancements, and small AI companies wanting clarity. These factions often want regulation because, one, it creates a predictable rules, two, it pressures China, three, it boosts domestic government partnerships, it protects their market position, and reins in big incumbents. So the pressure campaign isn't necessarily contradicting Trump's promises, it's coming from a different AI faction. So like, these people over here really don't care what the tech bros want. They want to get ahead faster in their own agenda, and the tech bros just want to say, leave us alone, let us do our thing. And I don't think that's fair on either side. So in camp A, you have let us motivate with minimal rules, and the people who fall in there are Amazon, Meta, Google, and the startups. In camp B, we want regulation now, is OpenAI, Anthropic, Stability AI, the larger players in the corporate AI sector, along with defense-related AI organizations, smaller AI labs that want guardrails around the big players. So this 10,000 calls to Congress push is coming from the B camp, not the tech bro CEO camp. And it's a really interesting discussion. It's an argument that if you have any understanding of where these companies originate from and the stakes and the supporters, because if you think about this, OpenAI is backed by Microsoft. Anthropic has its own whole infrastructure, and I have to see who they're backed by. Stability AI, I don't know much about. These defense-related organizations are working with defense contractors like Northrop Grumman or any of the other litany of you know, Blackwater and people like that. The smaller AI labs are in alignment with startups, but they're funded by other organizations. I'm interested in here, though, because Google has its own AI. It has Gemini, and Google also has an AI component in search now. If you search something using Google, many oftentimes you'll get a AI response before you get the research. And the thing about Google's is it always, and chat does this as well, and so does Uber Suggest. Uber Suggest is an SEO tool. They help you analyze keywords that best fit your products or your website and who you're trying to reach. And they're along with SEMrush and others in the marketing realm, they help us evaluate who is interested in our products and services and who reads our content and everything like this. Uber Suggest was the first one I used for blogging because it gave me a full list of all of the resources it accessed to give me the blog that it helped me write, right? So I always had access to my cited content, and I didn't use ChatGPT for a long time when it first came out because it did not offer that same level of authenticity. A few years later, probably I want to say more like 18 months later, ChatGPT started offering links to cited content in mainstream media, and then it would use independent sources, but at least it was giving me sources now. So having these things be significantly regulated in one arena is good for safety and for jobs and things, but on the other hand, it really stifles innovation. So this is really an important conversation. Where is the line? It's like cloning humans. Is that ethical? Should it be legal? And what does, because I mean, they're cloning animals, right? So it runs along, I think, the same ethical guidelines and regulatory need. How Trump handles competing tech factions is strategically, we hope anyway, at least his team. Because while I have little to no respect for a certain world leader, many of the people around that person may not be smart in the ways we would like, but they aren't dumb either, right? A lot of these people understand what's happening. So Trump has historically taken a flexible stance with industry groups based on political advantage, business deals, national security framing, donor influence, and public optics. That's always been something of an issue where he's concerned. So even if he made verbal commitments to the big tech leaders earlier, he may allow or even encourage certain super PACs to pressure Congress for quote-unquote pro-American AI legislation because, one, it sounds strong on national security, it aligns with America First innovation messaging, it creates leverage over Silicon Valley, and it sets the stage for future industrial policy, whatever that means. It doesn't necessarily contradict his stance. It simply reflects competing power centers jockeying for influence. So here's the bottom line. It looks contradictory because Trump often promises a light touch on oversight to tech giants. But these super PACs are pushing a national security-driven vision for AI regulation, which is a different political lane. They're not breaking his agreements. They're pushing a parallel agenda that benefits a different part of the AI ecosystem. nationally for defense and security aligned groups. These people want AI regulation that won't slow innovation, but it'll control access to powerful AI systems and keep China and Russia from gaining an edge, which I don't know if they've ever heard of DeepSeek at all, because it seemed, and I have to look at some updated information, but it seemed that for $6 million, a system that rivaled a $50 billion investment in ChatGPT was a little bit of, you know, didn't balance out very well. And there was mass discussion around the fact that DeepSeek took a fraction of labor hours and money to come up with something that was at least on the surface deeper and easier to get credible information from, that cost $6 million. Back in 2009, 2010, Japan, the Japanese Technology Institute deployed the very first runway model as a robot. And I don't remember her name off the top of my head, but she walks and talks, and you can go look up runway robot in Japan from the Japanese Technical Institute, and you can learn all about the history of how they built her, and now they have a few of them, I guess. That was way before anything like Boston Dynamics here, or, you know, Boston Dynamics is the organization that created Spot, the mechanical dog, the robot dog. That was Boston Dynamics. I'm not into this stuff or anything, right? So I don't know what the big... They have all sort of different robots that do serve different functions. Spot was just the most notable because he's been adopted by police forces and the military and things like this. So for back to what we were talking about, in case you didn't know, my background is in IT and project management and tech, and so that's why I get it. I geek on this stuff. So they want AI regulation, not slow innovation, but to control who has access to powerful AI, and that's where we got into keeping China and Russia at bay. These groups include Leading the Future PAC, Building American AI, defense-aligned think tanks, former intelligence officials, national security tech advisors. What they're pushing for, or why they're pushing for it, is fear of foreign adversaries using AI against the U.S., a very valid concern. Fear of autonomous weapons with no rules. We already have those. Fear of deep fake political warfare, which has actually been going on since like the early 20-teens. Fear of autonomous weapons with no rules. We have that. Okay. Want guidelines to prevent national security disasters. Their language that they're using to motivate people to move on this quickly is protect families, community values, and the America Must Win movement. OpenAI, Anthropic, mid-size AI labs. There's a one, if you're interested in AI and you want to try some different things, there's one called AI Test Kitchen, and it used to be a waiting list opportunity. I think it's open to all now. I've been on it for a couple of years. And that one was the first one I could go to and ask it to create an image with text over it. And it did it right, actually, because you'll notice if you try to do that. Chat is better now, but it used to be, and Midjourney does some interesting things, but it used to be like it would kind of sort of get the text. It would spell it wrong. It would put it in the wrong places. AI Test Kitchen, you can use the image generator and a text feature on it, and it was actually the only one I could find that did it right. It's failed me a couple of times, but not nearly as often as it's been awesome. But chat is getting better. So these people are pushing because they want regulation so the field doesn't become an arms race. They want liability protections, yes. Because, I mean, a lot of stuff can happen with these tools. And if you're the company that's innovating them and creating them and deploying them, then you need some liability protections. They want standards that protect them from reckless competitors. Agree. And they want rules around safety testing and deployment. Nowhere in any of this am I seeing... they say this is the responsible AI crowd, quote unquote, responsible AI. OpenAI's Sam Altman practically begged Congress for the last year. Anthropic has issued safety frameworks, and these groups see existential risks if AI continues to run unchecked. I agree to a large extent. But don't tie our hands, right? Tech policy think tanks and academics, these are the folks that are worried about the deep fake elections. That is priority. That is a number one issue on in this class altogether. Two is privacy harms, another high level. Algorithm discrimination, job loss, AI perpetuating racism and bias, and unregulated surveillance systems. Organizations that are concerned about these things include the Center for Human Tech. That's a great organization. You should get on their mailing list. AI Now Institute, the Brookings AI division is really good. Georgetown Center for Security and Engineering, the Georgetown Center for Security and Emerging Tech. I need to look them up. Their language is more like we need guardrails and we need safety standards. So the labor unions, AFL-CIO, SEIU, and Communications Workers of America and Hollywood writers and actors, they're pushing for this for AI threats to jobs. Unregulated AI can replace workers. Absolutely. They want protections for their creative work and office staff. Now, as a voiceover artist, I've been on a lot of these gig sites. So there's voices.com. There's 123 Voices, I believe it is. There's a litany. There's Fiverr. There's a litany of voiceover companies that help voiceover artists land commercial jobs, some in union, some not. Yes, voiceovers have a union. And what was it? 123voices.com or voices123.com had, when AI was first coming out as far as voice cloning and doing jingles or songs or whatever, like the cowboy song, the thing that came out on TikTok. I have to grab his name. They were sending me jobs where I would speak 50 to 60 sentences and using different emotional types and things like this. There are artists and voiceover people and people in acting who have opted in to do this. And what you do is you craft the recording the way they instruct you, and you send it to them, and they use it in their training models. CapCut is a perfect example of this. And I ran across a jingle maker last week that I've had so much fun with. But as a voiceover artist, I feel bad if I'm using somebody else's voice for the videos that I do in different situations. But I also remember that voiceover artists were the ones that submitted this information, and so did other actors or people off the street. Some people would just send in stuff. And if you're in CapCut and you're trying to create an avatar, you can go through all the voices and you can tell which ones did it from their phone. Not only is that unprofessional, but it doesn't sound good either. So people have advocated to do this all over the world. And so I am not as gung-ho about fighting for regulation around jingle and song development and avatar creators, because I clone my voice. I've cloned my voice a few times. I have a couple of characters that I created from my headshot, and I recloned my voice. So I put those two together in CapCut and have made videos on them, right? And I'm giving some industry secrets. But these help us. If I wanted to do that in a studio outside of my own, it would cost me, you know, $500-$600, and to have them do the editing and everything. I do it myself, and having the editing knowledge helps. But if I didn't have the capacity to do these things myself, I'd have to pay a lot of money for it. And so these innovations are helping those of us who can access them, but they are hindering those who aren't able to, right? They are getting further smushed down in the crowd if they don't have access to the tools and talent that many of us do have access to. So I can see where the regulation needs to be, but there's got to be, you know, some leverage for people who do have access, because we've worked hard for this. And I'm not the only one. There's a bunch of us out here who are doing trainings all the time, invest thousands in tools and infrastructure and the things that we need to do our jobs. Anyways, so the civil rights and digital rights organizations, they want like the ACLU, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the NAACP Tech Policy Teams, Algorithmic Justice League, the Fight for the Future, and they want regulations around policy use of AI, hello, yes, 100%, and surveillance systems, because they're, that's not it. Either there's facial recognition software that's bias. There is, I'm trying to get down to where I need to be. And there's misuse of personal data. So that's something that's serious around the public use of AI, is in many cases, it's been found to improperly profile people based on skin color or name recognition, right? So a name might be similar to this other person's name. Something like that happened recently here in Portland. It's similar to them, but it's not them. And they look similar, but it's not. And there's other issues around AI use in identity profiling. For small and mid-sized tech firms, these companies fear big tech monopolizing the space. From this position, I feel it. They want fair compensation, they want fair competition. They want rules so Google and Amazon don't bury us, or even bury them, the tech firms. They want clarity on what they can build legally understood, because right now the big guys are writing all the rules. They're not pushing for heavy regulation. They're pushing for predictable regulation. And then bipartisan members of Congress are wanting some regulation because they're worried about national security. They have representatives worried about elections and lawmakers worried about deep fakes. So they're on board with a lot of our fears, but I still stand in the space of we need younger congressional leaders because these 85-year-old people don't know what they're talking about by and large. And that is going to be the end of my talk about AI regulation. What are your thoughts on this? You can email me at PDX, P as in Paul, D as in Delta, X as in Xanadu, pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com. PDX Progressive Talk Radio started out as a TV show on public access out of Oregon City, and it was Progressive Talk Radio on TV. So that's why the email. I just haven't had an opportunity to change it yet. pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com is where you can write to me and tell me what your thoughts are around the $10 million movement to regulate AI for the big guys and leave everybody else behind, because that's what this sounds like. That's the show for today. Thank you for tuning in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio and KBOO. Next time, we're going to talk about the holiday season and why buying local is actually an act of rebellion. Until